Good evening. Glad to see everyone here this evening. We'll be continuing our study of the book of Revelation. I think we left off somewhere in chapter 11. I've got marked to begin at verse 9 of chapter 11. I think Leon last time actually covered on into some later chapters with some of the information he was discussing in the process of the review he was making, and then he went on into some future chapters. But I did want to just reiterate that there are a couple of key points in the book of Revelation that many people seem to miss. Many people misunderstand, misrepresent this book. It's probably one of the most misrepresented of all the biblical books. And two key things to me are in the first chapter where John says that these things are things that will happen shortly or must happen shortly. And then another is the idea of these signifying signs that are being that this is done in signs and symbols. So the word shortly and the word signify. We'll see later that John was told, well, let me first say that in the next chapter, or the next couple of chapters, we'll see a much closer tie into the book of Daniel, Daniel chapter 7, Daniel's dream. And Daniel was told to seal up what he had heard or seen, because it would be many days before these things would happen. And we know it was several centuries before they happened. John, later in the book of Revelation, is told not to seal this, not to hold it back, again, because it will be shortly. So the people that misunderstand would have you believe that the things that Daniel spoke about were just a few centuries, but the things John was told to immediately tell were several millennia or a couple of millennia away. So those two words to me are very key to what I understand about the book of Revelation. As Leon said, it's a book of symbols. It's a book that is not to be taken literally, and if you take it literally when it said that it's going to be symbols, then you're doing an injustice to the writing and to the book itself. The book also is, as we have read and as we've said many times, not only is it a book of symbols and things that will happen soon, the things that it tells are going to happen were to bring comfort to the people that it was sent to those that heard this and read this in the first century, the end of the first century. These Christians in Asia, and since it was the seven churches of Asia, the complete number seven, those complete Christian churches were being persecuted by the Roman Empire. Not only the Roman gods, the Roman goddesses, these false gods that they worship, but also their emperors. They had started this process of emperor worship. And the Christians in the first century, the end of the first century, and on in to the second century and beyond, were under a lot of pressure to fall in line with this emperor worship and worshiping the false gods. To the point of, in some areas, they weren't allowed to own property. If they didn't, they weren't allowed to have employment, to work, unless they did sacrifice to these idols or worship the emperors in some way. So they were victims of quite a bit of persecution. And the messages that we've seen so far and will continue to see are messages of comfort, that if they can overcome this, if they can not give in to this persecution, that they will receive reward. And it should also be comfort to us, because the same message is to us. If we can continue in our faith, continue to do God's will, then we can overcome this persecution. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not going to suffer some kind of harm or something happen to us in this life. But even if it does, like the great throne scene shows, even if a Christian is killed, somebody who has been faithful is killed, they're going to be in comfort in the presence of God. So this should be a comforting message, not only to the Christians of the first century, but to us also. They were persecuted. We talked about Smyrna is identified as the poor church that was rich. Poor because they didn't have possessions, again, possibly because of this not being able to be employed or not owning property because of the persecution from the government. But aren't we seeing that same thing today? More and more as the days go by, we're seeing more persecution against Christians from various governments, including in some cases our own government, and it's getting worse and worse. While I was reviewing this, my outline today, I did look on some of the current events. I saw something that caught my eye. And again, this was only published yesterday. It was on Fox News website. And I did try to look and saw it on several different sources, but I don't know the complete story, but it did catch my attention. The city of Houston has issued subpoenas demanding a group of pastors, as they term it, turn over any sermons dealing with homosexuality, gender identity, or Anise Parker, the city's first openly lesbian mayor. And those ministers who fail to comply could be held in contempt of court. I could go on with the story. There's a law group that has filed a suit on behalf of these, I'll say ministers, the article says pastors, that they should not have to do that. And this caught my attention for a couple of reasons. First, if they did that here, they wouldn't have to subpoena them. They could go out on the internet and listen to them because of what we've set up here. But the other is, why does the government in that city want to get copies of the sermons or lessons that these people have done related to homosexuality? And as I read further, it's apparently some sort of anti-gender bias law that this city's put in place that makes it illegal for anybody to distinguish between male and female or other in any way. And even to the point of there's not supposed to be any more male and female restrooms in that area. So some people in the area have filed suit against the city because they say that's not an appropriate law. And the reaction that the city made was to subpoena these sermons. And these preachers are not necessarily involved in the original lawsuit, but they're being singled out. And the only reason could be for intimidation purposes, knowing, you know, I guess the idea is, if the government's going to subpoena your sermons, maybe you won't preach about the wrong, how wrong homosexuality is. Don't know where this is going to go. It just caught my attention, and it just struck me that this is something else that a government is getting into an area that it shouldn't be involved in, and it's more persecution against Christians on a religious basis. I'll be interested to see what happens with this. But again, I don't know that in our area it would matter because our all the sermons and lessons we have are public knowledge anyway, available without subpoena. But it's just one of those things that caught my attention, like the idea that people that have a bakery business in certain areas and bake wedding cakes are having to go out of business because they won't bake for a homosexual wedding, and they're being sued because of that, and they're having to close their business down. People that do photography work for weddings are having to do the same thing in certain states, certain areas. And then this comes along. It seems like it's going much faster than it was for a while. I used to say, give me 30 more years of the America that I grew up in, and I won't have to worry about it anymore. but I'm not going to make 30 more years, because the America is changing every day that we grew up in. It's changing every day, and it's more persecution. But back to the point, we should take comfort in what we're reading in Revelation, just like the first century Christians could take comfort in what they read as they read this, knowing that they were being persecuted by the Roman Empire. And yet, if they could hold out against that persecution, they would receive the reward that is told to each one of them, that if they can persevere, they can receive their reward. I think Leon got through the first part of chapter 11, where John was told to measure the temple, and he got down to the two witnesses.
I was just going to say, persevere, you'd be rewarded. Persevere doesn't necessarily mean that you survive either.
No.
It means that you stand for truth even through death. And for some, that was indeed the case.
Right.
That's a strange thought. You need to be thinking it from that perspective and being prepared in that fashion.
And it doesn't mean that you'll have your freedom either. I mean, we could be imprisoned just like they were in the first century. And we've talked about the martyrs of the first century that, you're right, they didn't survive, but they persevered. Leon had mentioned talked about the two witnesses. If I can turn my page. The two witnesses, and as he mentioned, in looking at, he had us look at John chapter 15, verse 26 and 27, that talks about the apostles being witness, and the Spirit. And he proposed that that's who the two witnesses would be. And even if it turns out to be someone different, if it's Elijah and Moses, as some would say, if it's others, the Bible does teach that Jesus said the apostles would be a witness, that the Spirit would be. The idea of Elijah did stop the rain, which the witnesses had the ability to close up the cloud where it wouldn't rain, and did it for 3.5 years, as a matter of fact. And then Moses, one of the plagues that he delivered, that God brought on Egypt, was turning the water into blood, which is mentioned that the witnesses would have that authority also. He also mentioned, before we finished, the great city. It talks about the beast rising up to kill the witnesses after they had made their testimony, and that they would line the street of the great city, which is mystically called Sodom and Egypt, where also their Lord was crucified. It talked about Sodom being a symbol of immorality, Egypt as oppressing the Lord's people. And the city where the Lord was crucified is Jerusalem. But some 10 times, and I went through counting, Leon mentioned some 10 times the great city is mentioned in the book of Revelation. And I got to 10 and quit. I think there was even more than that I found. And it's referring to Rome. It says Babylon, or in reference to Rome, when it says great city. So if I understood what Leon was saying last week and what I've read in my understanding, when it talks about the great city and it mentions the great Babylon or the great city, is talking about the city of Rome when it says that. But that their bodies would lay there dead for, again, 3.5 days, this idea of 3.5, the indeterminate number. It's not complete. It's not forever. It's an indeterminate number. But then they would rise up again. They would resurrect, and then they would go up into heaven, and that the fear would come upon those their enemies who saw them. When the last apostle was killed, well, John, as far as we know, died from old age. We don't know of a violent death for John, one way or the other. But those apostles who were martyred, when they were killed and when John died, they had made their testimony. They had told what they were to tell. And when they died, what happened? The church started growing. There was a scattering, and the church grew. So the idea here is, yes, when they finished their testimony, then they were killed, but the church was not. The message of the Lord was not killed. It was not. The Romans thought they had made headways in stopping it and pushing it down, but just when they did, it started cropping up elsewhere. It was never really killed. It came back to life from what they thought they had actually killed. So again, this 3.5 number comes up. It comes up several times. And looking at some of the symbology of the numbers, with 7 being the perfect or complete number, 3.5, half of 7 is like, for lack of a better term, as Leon used, a broken number or an indeterminate number, but it's not forever. It is just an indeterminate, broken period of time. And we'll see it come up again. It's already been mentioned in the idea of 42 months, which is about 3.5 years, 1260 days, which is again about 3.5 years, and then there's 3.5 days that are mentioned. And as we'll see later and was talked about last time, when it says a time and times and half a time, that would indicate one time, and then times being 2, which makes 3, and then a half a time is 3, would be another half, 3.5. So we'll see this number coming up again. So I think that's about where we had gotten to last time. So starting with verse 15, well, let me back up to 14, and then we'll read to the end of the chapter. The second woe is past, behold, the third woe is coming quickly. Now we see the seventh trumpet. We've had this interlude between the sixth and seventh trumpet. But starting in verse 15, then the seventh angel sounded, and there were loud voices in heaven saying, the kingdom of the world has become the kingdom of our Lord and of his Christ, and he will reign forever and ever. And the 24 elders who sit on their thrones before God fell on their faces and worshiped God, saying, we give you thanks, O Lord God, the Almighty, who are and who were, because you have taken your great power and have begun to reign. And the nations were enraged, and your wrath came, and the time came for the dead to be judged, and the time to reward your bondservants, the prophets and the saints, and those who fear your name, the small and the great, and to destroy those who destroy the earth. And the temple of God, which is in heaven, was opened, and the ark of his covenant appeared in his temple. And there were flashes of lightning and sounds and peals of thunder and an earthquake and a great hailstorm. And that's from the New American Standard Version reading. We've had this interlude between the sixth trumpet and the seventh trumpet, and now the angel sounds the seventh trumpet. Have you ever... Again, I don't want to trivialize the message here, but I think this is kind of what I thought. Have you ever watched a replay of a sporting event and you already knew what the outcome was, but you were watching the replay of it as it happened? Some of us have done that now. We're told the outcome here. We're told the ending. We give thanks, O Lord the Almighty, who are and who were, because you have taken your great power and have begun to reign. And the nations were enraged, and your wrath came, and the time came for the dead to be judged. He's told us how it's going to end, but we still have a time to get there. So we're seeing here, if you will, the end of the story. And that's the loud voices cry from heaven, and then the 24 elders fall on their faces. I did notice, and I don't know that there's any real meaning to this. The King James actually, and Raymond, you read the King James, and can you read verse 17 for me?
We give thee thanks, O Lord God Almighty, which art and was and art to come, because thou hast taken to thee thy great power and hast reigned.
Okay, the King James, and I also noticed the New King James puts in, and is to come. And that matches what's said in chapter 1 when Jesus said, I am Alpha and Omega, and he says, who was and is to come. Many of the older manuscripts didn't have that in there. So that's why it's not in anything that I could see other than the King James and New King James. So that is to come is not in this particular part. Again, I don't know if that's any great meaning that it's not there, but it was in chapter 1. But again, I think what we're looking at here is not, we're seeing what the outcome is going to be. And we've said that, I've heard Steve say it several times, that we know how this is going to end. We know what the outcome will be. And here, John is being told, and he's relaying to the churches, this is what the outcome is going to be. God is in control, and God is going to prevail. The forces of evil are not going to prevail against him. God is going to prevail in what happens. The idea of the temple of God open in heaven with the Ark of His Covenant, again, this is not the physical temple we're talking about. As was said last time, and we made reference to Ephesians chapter 2, 19 through 22, the temple is a spiritual temple. It's not the physical temple, but the spiritual temple of God we see in heaven, and the Ark of the Covenant. Some say, I've read some commentaries that say the Ark is there to show that worship is no longer just in Jerusalem, but is universal throughout the world. I don't know that that's the case, because Jesus had already told the woman at the well that the time would come and is now here when the worship would not be in this mountain or in Jerusalem. So, but what we do see is, with all this going on, the great flashes of lightning, the thunder, the earthquake, and John looks up and sees this spiritual temple and the Ark of the Covenant there, and relays this to the churches again. This will bring them comfort that God has not forgotten his people, and he is in charge and will prevail, and again, hasn't forgotten his covenant with his people. Any comments or questions at this point? I think the seventh trumpet was fairly easy compared to some of the others. Does everybody have questions on chapter 11? Does anybody need the questions on chapter 11? I think they have 10 at the top and... Yes, chapter 10 and 11. Anybody else? Okay. We got to somewhere over on this side last time, I think. And are you next? Going that way. Okay, Stanley's next.
What was John told to measure? The temple of God and the altar.
Okay, and those who worship in it. And next, number two.
What was he saying?
It's the number two down in the middle of the page. Down.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Next one, number three. Yes, Stanley.
How long were the witnesses to prophesy? 1,260 days.
Okay. Number four. Okay, to stand before the Lord on earth. Next.
What three things were the witnesses given power to do? Shut up the sky, burn fire into blood, smite the earth with clay.
Okay. Number six. Okay.
What was the greatest power spiritually?
Sodom and Egypt and the city where the Lord was crucified. Number eight. Joe? Okay, so they were resurrected from the dead. I guess Julie is next.
Tell what transpired when the seventh angel sounded. There were loud voices from heaven, or in heaven, saying, the kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ. Their 24 elders fell down on their faces and worshiped God.
Okay. And number 10.
What was seen in the temple of God, the ark of his covenant.
Okay. And lightning, thunder, earthquake, and a hailstorm. Came after that. Okay.
Then the ark was talking about all such doubts. Of course, the invasion of God was through the ark and the small stuff.
Okay, good. If you didn't hear Bobby, he said that. On the subject of homosexuality, that the article I read today touched on, that Jim Deason has a very good article in this month's Biblical Insights. If you haven't got your copy, I guess there's still some copies in the foyer. Be a good article to read.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I've thought about similar things, well, for several years, but you're right. But God did give us a will to live. I mean, we do have a will and a desire to live, and we're to live for Him. But sometimes you think about the world getting so bad, it would be better to be in paradise, much better. I mean, we know it would be better. But again, we do have that will to live. I don't want to use too much of the class time, but I do recall one of my grandfathers was very, he unfortunately was a primitive Baptist, but he was very devout, if you will, as a primitive Baptist. And on his deathbed, he at first he told somebody that his name was written up there and pointed, and was not worried. But right before he died, he was very, you could tell he was scared. He wouldn't go to sleep because he wouldn't close his eyes because he didn't think he would open them. So we do have that will to live, but like you say, we shouldn't fear death for the very reason that the Christians in the first century shouldn't fear death. Because what if they did get killed? So what, they're going to be in God's presence, in His comfort. Just like the 24 elders that John saw and reported on, the martyrs that were there. So there's nothing that the evil, and in this case, that we're talking about the Roman Empire, and in our case now, like you say, terrorists or our government, there's nothing they can do to us as long as we keep our faith and we continue to look forward to that home in heaven. So I think that's a very good point. I think I was going to start chapter 12, but rather than do that now, I'll let Leon talk about the woman, the dragon, and the male child when he gets back, and the battle between Michael and the dragon. So he'll get the good part of this then. Yeah.